Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's a commonplace idiom that gained popularity, I guess, during the ascent of marijuana as a stimulant, intoxicant, a whatever. And it was and is, he's high on his own supply. Well, it applies not only to people, apparently, it applies to machines, we learn this week. Researchers have found that the buildup of AI-generated content on the internet is set to collapse machine learning models unless the industry can mitigate the risks. The University of Oxford team found that using AI-generated data sets to train future models may generate gibberish. That's not a known language yet. A concept is known as model collapse. You've seen that in Paris. No, you haven't. In one example, a model started with a text about European architecture in the Middle Ages and ended up nine generations down spouting nonsense about jackrabbits. It was high on its own supply. In a paper published this week in Nature, work led by a couple of researchers found that an AI may fail to pick up less common lines of text in training data sets, which means subsequent models trained on the output cannot carry forward those nuances. Training new models on the output of earlier models in this way ends up in a recursive loop. Reason this may be happening, of course, is because, starting with the New York Times, a lot of publishers and websites have said in varying degrees of severity, don't scrape our stuff for your stuff. Don't scrape our text for your AI models. Quote, long-term poisoning attacks on language models are not new, says the paper. For example, we saw the creation of click content and troll farms, a form of human language models whose job is to misguide social networks and search algorithms. The negative effect that these poisons had on search results led to changes in search algorithms. Google downgraded farmed articles, putting more emphasis on content produced by trustworthy sources, such as education domains. DuckDuckGo removed these farmed articles, from content farms altogether. What is different with the arrival of large language models, the ones we're dealing with now, such as GPT-4, is the scale at which such poisoning can happen once it's automated. In an accompanying article, Emily Wenger, assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at Duke, illustrated model collapse with the example of a system tasked with generating images of dogs. The AI model, she says, will gravitate towards recreating the breeds of dog most common in its training data, so might overrepresent the golden retriever compared with the petite basset griffon Vendean, given the relative prevalence of the two breeds. If subsequent models are trained on an AI-generated data set that overrepresents golden retrievers, the problem is compounded. With enough of those cycles, the model will forget that obscure dog breeds exist and generate pictures of just golden retrievers. Unquote. I guess that's good for the retrievers. Eventually, she concludes, the model will collapse, rendering it unable to generate meaningful content. Unquote. The process of collapse is a serious problem for meaningful representative output that includes less common ideas and ways of writing. This is the problem at the heart of model collapse, she says. One existing approach to mitigate is to watermark AI-generated content, but those watermarks can be easily removed from AI-generated images. Sharing watermark information also requires considerable coordination between AI companies. And that's not happening. The two researchers say that training a model with AI-generated data is not impossible, but the industry needs to establish an effective means of filtering data. But the paper says the need to distinguish data generated by LLMs from other data raises questions about the provenance of content that is crawled from the internet. It's unclear how content generated by LLMs can be tracked at scale. Unquote. Those machines are getting high on their own supply. Hello, welcome to the show. From Santa Monica, home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. A little more about AI. This week, OpenAI, the maker of ChatGPT, announced a prototype AI tool that can search the internet and answer questions. It's called SearchGPT. The launch is designed to hint at how AI will transform the ways in which people navigate the internet. This from The Atlantic. But in a pre-recorded demo video, a mock user types music festivals in Boone, North Carolina in August into the search interface. The tool then pulls up a list of festivals that says are taking place in Boone this August, the first being an Appalachian Summer Festival. According to the tool, it's hosting a series of arts events from July 29th to August 16th in Boone. But if you tried to buy those tickets, you'd run into trouble. In fact, the festival started on June 29th. We'll have its final concert, or had its final concert, July 27th. Instead, July 29th through August 16th, the dates the search interface listed, are the dates for which the festival's box office will be officially closed. I think all of us may remember the errors, including racist and hateful messages sent by newly introduced AI products earlier this decade, including when Google rolled out AI-generated answers to its search bar, and the model told people that eating rocks is healthy and Barack Obama is a Muslim. Chatbots are supposed to revolutionize first the internet and then the physical world, but for now they can't even properly copy-paste from a music festival website. And in a related, exciting new technological frontier, on July 24th, MonoSwap, a decentralized exchange platform, announced that it had suffered a malicious hack and warned users not to stake or add additional funds. MonoSwap also warned users to withdraw their funds from the platform immediately to avoid losses and not to interact with a malicious link, which the protocol identified in a social media post. According to the platform, one of its developers accidentally installed a malicious phishing application and was lured into a call with scammers pretending to be venture capitalists. At some point during the call, scammers installed malicious software into the developer's computer, which reportedly had access to all the platform's wallets and contracts. Not wallets and grommets, wallets and contracts. This allowed the hackers to withdraw most of the staked liquidity, i.e., money, on the platform. MonoSwap is investigating the incident. Earlier this month, CoinGecko co-founder and chief operating officer Bobby Ong warned the crypto community that crypto hacks were increasing, cautioning users not to interact with crypto over the next several days. It's a crypto winner, isn't it? Now, of course, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersol III. Well, this happened 2 days before the Olympics officially open. One could hope it's been resolved by now, but several athletes complained, according to the BBC, about a shortage of food at the Olympic Village. You know the one in Paris? Competitors have said the amount of food available, specifically eggs, which were rationed at breakfast on Wednesday, and grilled meats, is insufficient. This according to the French newspaper L'Equipe.
Ah, the French.
Thank you, Orson. The official catering partner for the Olympic Village, Sodexo Live, confirmed a, quote, very high demand, unquote, for certain products, and said that volumes will be increased to satisfy the needs of the athletes, unquote. It was requested, they continued, to revise upwards the quantities initially planned, which the group will be able to satisfy, unquote, a spokesman. And, looking ahead, the only way to look, the dispute between two anti-doping bodies, agencies, is threatening to derail the 2028 Olympics in L.A. and the 2034 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City. What is this? The increasingly bitter feud between the World Anti-Doping Agency and the United States Anti-Doping Agency is what this is, and it stems from an earlier incident, according to Deadline. Close to 24 Chinese swimmers tested positive for banned medication at a training camp, but still competed in the 2021 Tokyo Olympics. The World Anti-Doping Agency accepted the findings of a Chinese investigation that blamed a contaminated hotel kitchen for the positive tests, according to Reuters. But the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency accused the World Anti-Doping Agency of a cover-up for the Chinese swimmers. Doping, of course, is illegal in the Olympics. It enhances performance, puts clean athletes at a disadvantage. The Winter Olympics in 2034 were awarded to Salt Lake City this week. The Olympic Committee warned that it could terminate the agreement in cases where the supreme authority of WADA, the World Agency on Doping, in the fight against doping is not fully respected, or if the application of the anti-doping code is hindered or undermined. The U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee Chief Gene Sykes tried to calm the situation. Quote, I'll say this as clearly as I can. We accept, we support, we subscribe to the World Anti-Doping Code. What we want to do is cool the tempers and find a way for these organizations to constructively work better together. And that's our responsibility. The amendment is only an amendment that allows the IOC to have an escape clause if the United States somehow undermines the World Doping Anti-Doping Code. We're not going to do that. We're going to try to make it stronger. The feud did escalate this week when Reuters reported the global body was taking the U.S. agency to the Independent Compliance Review Committee next month. Any country staging an international sporting event must be compliant with the World Anti-Doping Code. But we're talking about the Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one every day. Speaking of doping, sharks off the coast of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, have tested positive for cocaine. I said positive for cocaine. The predators were consuming the potent stimulant due to its continuous release from inadequate sewage treatment facilities and clandestine refining operations. This is what scientists wrote in a study published in Science of the Total Environment. Why don't they think big? Some may also have attacked bricks of cocaine which traffickers had lost at sea off the coast. Brazil is one of the world's largest markets for cocaine. Of the 12 specimens of Brazilian sharp-nosed sharks scientists tested almost 3 years, all presented cocaine in their muscle and liver tissue, according to the study by the Oswaldo Foundation Cruz, an institute of science, technology, and health. It is believed there may be an impact on the growth, maturation, and potentially the fecundity of sharks, since the liver plays a role in the development of embryos. That's a quote from one of the scientists involved. They collected the samples between September 2021 and August 2023, big cocaine years, remember, as they monitored environmental impacts of pollution on marine life. Because sharks are predators, the scientists said they were central figures in the food chain and were considered, quote, sentinel species, unquote, that could provide early warnings about environmental threats to humans. But humans take it voluntarily. The scientists did not list what effects cocaine and other drugs might have on sharks. Make them nicer? Although other studies have shown brown trout can become addicted to meth. Scientists elsewhere have documented that other pollutants like antidepressants, heavy metals, and birth control medications are also making their way into rivers, lakes, and oceans. And do the critters thank us? They do not.
If you want to get down,
Yes, she does. That's the word from the show coming from Santa Monica. Speaking of lies, a little more about the problem discussed at the top of the show. The collapse of models in AI when they're trained on data from AI. First of all, that is called synthetic data. That helps you believe in it, doesn't it? Synthetic data. As succeeding generations of large language models were trained on synthetic data from their predecessors, the team, the research team doing this work, expected to see errors crop up, but were surprised to see, quote, things go wrong very quickly. Complete collapse eventually occurs because each model learns not from reality, but from the previous model's prediction of reality, with errors getting amplified in each iteration. Of course, computers don't learn from reality. They learn from what humans tell them about reality. The problem is he's lazy. The problem is he stinks. No, that's another problem. The problem is analogous to inbreeding in a species, says Hami Farid, a computer scientist at UC Berkeley. His work has demonstrated the same effect in image models, producing eerie distortions of reality. It's like the machines are taking acid. Another drug reference. Model collapse does not mean that large language models will stop working, but the cost of making them will increase. As synthetic data build up in the web, the scaling laws that state models should get better the more data they train on are likely to break. And of course, aside from crypto mining, these machines will be using more and more and more electricity. You know, we here at the show, and I mean me, I'm the only one here, like to take you back in history, just for a little perspective. Not too much. Not too long ago, maybe a couple weeks ago, you may recall that Donald Trump was grazed, supposedly, by a bullet on his ear. And his early time at the subsequent Republican convention made it appear to some observers that he had been changed somehow by a near-death experience. Everybody said everybody would. But starting on the night when he delivered his acceptance speech, Thursday night, a week ago, it appeared that he hadn't changed all that much. And this past week, he reaffirmed that renewed perception.
I was supposed to be nice. They say something happened to me when I got shot. I became nice. And when you're dealing with these people, they're very dangerous people. When you're dealing with them, you can't be too nice. You really can't be. So if you don't mind, I'm not going to be nice. Is that okay? They want me to be nice.
And sure enough, later this week, the ex-president called his putative, presumptive opponent, Kamala Harris, quote, a bum, unquote.
I call her a bitch, but she's really a witch. I get her really effed when I call her lunatic left. It's a virtue. No way, it's a vice. No, I really can't be nice. insult to the flag. He looks like a hag. It makes her cry when I call her DEI. Don't even have to tell you twice. I don't even recall how to be nice. Her mind is a Borg. She's a pig. She's a dog. My last words to her: I don't want to screw her. No matter the price, you'll never see me be nice. It's painful to hear her. She scares her own mirror. She's got that laugh like a crow and a half. We should check her for lice. That's me not being nice.
From Santa Monica, this is Le Show. And now, News of the Godly. This week, kind of a trip around the world in child abuse. Religious child abuse, I should say. Starting off with Ireland. A joint investigation by the Irish national broadcaster RTE and the Irish Mail on Sunday has revealed that the Vatican and Irish bishops did not notify the public that the reasons for the suspension from ministry of the late Bishop Eamon Casey related to child sexual abuse allegations in both England and Ireland. They got together on it. The public has long believed that the bishop's suspension related to his relationship with American divorcee Annie Murphy, mother to his son. The bishop, who spent much of his early priesthood in English parishes, resigned as Bishop of Galway and Kilmacduagh and as apostolic administrator of Kilfenora in 1992 after the media became aware of that relationship. So while the Vatican could have said to have been acted responsibly in regard to child safeguarding, its failure to explain the reasons for Casey's suspension has resulted in another public relations disaster, as well as giving the church's critics fresh ammunition to being able to cite another example of clerical wrongdoing, about which full transparency by the hierarchy was not forthcoming. This is from the Catholic Herald. Casey died in 2017, a decade after being suspended from ministry. During that time, there were even widespread calls on the Irish bishops to remove the suspension. An unsuspecting public argued that his relationship with Murphy, while inappropriate, was with a consenting adult. But Casey's own niece, Patricia Donovan, has given a public interview to the Irish national broadcaster about being raped by her uncle as a young girl. A well-known priest, Father Brian Darcy, has this week in an interview for the Irish RTE network criticized the Vatican's silence on the matter. He said that while the papal nuncio at the time had known not to attend the bishop's funeral in Galway, he had not notified the president of Ireland, Michael Higgins, who did attend the funeral. Public anger at the revelations has been so widespread that several callers to the station's Liveline program demanded that the body of the bishop be removed from the crypt of the Cathedral of Our Lady Assumed into Heaven and St. Nicholas. One caller described the cathedral as a temple of evil and said he would not set foot on it, other than for funerals, unless the bishop's body was removed. Another caller compared Casey to Satan. Eamon Casey was for many years one of Ireland's best-known bishops, appearing regularly on TV chat shows. His flamboyant personality gave him a high profile. The RTE documentary Buried Secrets features an interview with Ian Elliott, former CEO of the church's National Board for Safeguarding Children. He describes Casey as, quote, a sexual predator, commenting on Patricia Donovan's account of being raped by her uncle at the age of 5 and abused for many years after. He said her account was, quote, entirely credible, unquote. The documentary revealed that while the Galway Diocese had stated in 2019 it had only received one allegation against Casey, it has now confirmed the records of 5 people who complained about being abused by him. It also revealed the Limerick Diocese, there once was a Limerick Diocese, paid over 100,000 euros to one of the bishop's accusers. Now the spotlight shifts to New Zealand. As part of a 6-year investigation into decades of abuse and neglect in that country, New Zealand pointed to the Catholic Church, among other institutions, for what it said was the church's role in perpetuating abuse. The New Zealand Abuse Commission focused on uncovering abuse and neglect in state and faith-based care institutions from 1950 to 1999 in a final report released this week. The report found abuse and neglect of 200,000 survivors in New Zealand state and faith institutions, pointing to the Catholic Church and Catholic institutions in particular for enabling abusers. Quote, if this injustice is not addressed, it will remain as a stain on our national character forever, said the chief advisor of the commission. The New Zealand Commission said the Catholic Church and Catholic Charities responded inadequately to complaints of abuse and neglect, appointed abusers to schools, prioritized forgiveness over safeguarding and accountability. The report reveals up to 42% of those in faith-based care, run by all denominations, were abused in New Zealand during that time period. A 2020 briefing from the Catholic Church previously noted abuse allegations against 14% of its New Zealand clergy during those decades. This from Catholic News Agency. The forms of abuse included physical, emotional, mental, sexual, as well as cultural neglect and racism against the indigenous Maori. The commission found the Catholic Church relied heavily on psychiatrists' opinions, leading to transferring abusers to other areas of ministry where they reoffended. In addition, it also found the church at fault for prioritizing its reputation over safety and the creation of a power imbalance between clergy and parishioners. Quote, the assumed moral authority and trustworthiness of clergy and religious leaders allowed abusers in faith-based institutions to perpetuate abuse and neglect with impunity. Quote, religious beliefs were often used to justify the abuse and neglect and to silence survivors, unquote. Quote, in faith-based care settings, abuse was treated as a religious transgression that required survivors to forgive, let go of anger and blame, and instead embrace those who had sinned against them, and abusers merely to repent. Many abusers were relocated and went on to continue abusing people in care, unquote. The religious abuse spotlight now shifts to Bolivia. The Bolivia province of the Society of Jesus failed to follow instructions from the Jesuit Curia in Rome by allegedly not publicly disclosing the findings of an investigation into a pedophile priest, deepening a series of clerical sexual abuse scandals involving the Jesuit order in Bolivia. In 2019, the province investigated Father Luis Maria Roma, who documented in a diary his sexual abuse of at least 70 girls. It sent its report to Rome. The Curia told the Bolivian province in an email to offer reparations to the victims and publicize details of the case, including the perp's name. According to an investigation by the Spanish newspaper El País, the Curia also allegedly counseled keeping the diary confidential. The Bolivia province ignored all advice from the Jesuit Curia, except one, which was to keep the diary confidential. The Bolivian province ignored all advice from the Curia, except one, which was to keep the diary confidential. The Bolivian province sat on its internal investigation into Roma, not sharing it with Bolivian authorities for 3 years, nor did it make the suggested reparations to the victims. That according to the Spanish newspaper El País. Latest discovery of disregarded instructions raised questions of clerical abuse cases being suppressed by the Jesuits as details emerge of monstrous crimes committed by priests against children, with the perpetrators documenting details of their depravity in diaries and photographs. This is from the National Catholic Reporter, which goes on, two former Jesuit provincials have been charged with covering up the crimes of another Jesuit, Father Alfonso Pedrajas, whose diary, published last year, contained admissions that he sexually abused at least 85 children while working as an educator. Meanwhile, Roma, working as a parish priest between 1995 and 2004, he lured girls to a nearby river or his living quarters where he took inappropriate photos. Spanish paper El País said he could have abused over 100 victims. Roma died in 2019 and confessed in a notarized statement just before his death that he abused children. The Bolivian Jesuits have expressed regret for their handling of Roma's case. Then to Paris, where the Catholic Church already knew by 2021 of claims of sexual abuse against a beloved humanitarian French priest, the late Abbé Pierre. That's what members of an independent commission said this week. Abbé Pierre, or Henri Gru, was a Capuchin monk. I said a Capuchin monk, and an ordained Catholic clergyman. He died 2007, age 94. He left a legacy as a friend of the poverty-stricken and founder of a couple of charities. But this week it was revealed that seven women had made allegations of sexual assault or harassment by the elderly cleric back between 1970 and 2005. The French Commission had a slightly different estimate of the widespread nature of all this. It estimated over the past 70 years, around 330,000 people had been abused within the church when they were minors. Around the world in clerical child abuse, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, the apologies of the week.
So sorry.
Dateline Perry, Ohio, the emergency alarm started blaring at the Perry Nuclear Power Plant in Ashtabula County this week, according to a post on Facebook from the Emergency Management Agency. Your EMA. Neighbors commented on the post that they were scared. The EMA said a repair technician was working on the emergency notification system when the sirens were accidentally set off. The sirens cover a large area. The EMA apologized and assured the community that there was no emergency. Dateline Houston with a state-ordered investigation into Centerpoint, the energy giant in that area, underway, and their executives on a tight timeline to deliver answers to Texas Governor Abbott by next week. The power company issued a public apology this week over its response to Hurricane Beryl. What response? Well, more than 2 million customers all across the Houston area were left in the dark after Beryl. Some didn't get power for more than a week. The company is now promising to do a better job. Some people died. A lot of others suffered under sort of incredible heat conditions in their homes without lights or AC. And the head of Centerpoint added, quote, the smart meters, which they had just installed, were useful in our restoration efforts. However, they were not useful to our customers. And for that, I apologize, he said. The head of the Church of England, Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, apologized to the Jamaican people for what he described as the, quote, vile and disgusting sin, unquote, of slavery during a 200th anniversary Thanksgiving service of the Diocese of Jamaica and the Cayman Islands. And in a letter to the Diocese of Barbados, which also held a similar anniversary Thanksgiving service that day, he lamented the Church of England's, quote, history of complicity in the horrors of the transatlantic slave trade. He says, I cannot speak for the government of the United Kingdom, but I can speak for my own heart and represent what we say in England now. We are deeply, deeply, deeply sorry. That's three deeplies. We sinned against your ancestors. He said, even for those in the church who did not actively participate in transatlantic chattel enslavement, the silence of the Church of England was a collusion. The votes of the bishops in Parliament were a support for slavery, and their receiving of compensation for freeing their slaves was a profit from slavery, unquote. This reminds me, the only form of reparations ever paid in the United States post-slavery were to the former owners of slaves for the loss of their property. Dateline Sao Paulo, the Brazilian government on this week, apologized for human rights violations in the persecution and incarceration of Japanese immigrants in the years after World War II. Quote, I want to apologize on behalf of the Brazilian state for the persecution your ancestors suffered, for all the barbarities, atrocities, cruelties, tortures, prejudice, ignorance, xenophobia, and racism. Quite a list. That's the president of the Amnesty Commission that analyzes amnesty and reparation requests to victims of political persecution in the country. They have such a thing. The board approved the apology plea in a session in Brasilia, attended by members of the Brazilian government and prominent members of the Japanese community. 172 immigrants were sent to a concentration camp off the coast of Sao Paulo, where they were mistreated and tortured from 1946 to 1948. Brazil joined the Allies in 1942, cut diplomatic relations with Japan, after which the Brazilian government confiscated Japanese-owned properties, and immigrants were not allowed to gather or speak Japanese publicly. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear apologized to Diet Mountain Dew at a press conference this week after he criticized Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, Republican VP candidate, for, quote, weird comments involving the drink. Folks, this is quoting Beshear, folks, I've been a person that when sometimes I've gone over the line, I've wanted to make sure that I set the record straight. So I do owe an apology to Diet Mountain Dew, he said at the press conference. He had gone after Vance for comments Vance had made about Diet Mountain Dew at a Monday rally. The Kentucky governor has recently been among a few names being floated as possible Veep picks for Vice President Harris. Vance had said at the rally, Democrats say it's racist to do anything. I had a Diet Mountain Dew yesterday and one today. I'm sure they're going to call that racist too. But it's good, Vance said. In response, Bashir had said they were weird and questioned, who drinks Diet Mountain Dew? Unquote. But at his press conference later in the week, Bashir said he doesn't believe government should be making your decisions. Quote, so if you enjoy Diet Mountain Dew, you be you. We want to support you. And to Diet Mountain Dew, very sorry, didn't mean to say negative things about you. Unquote. The big Sonos app redesign was intended to make the company's software more modern, customizable, and easier to use. Sonos is a home hi-fi system app. But 2 months after its May release of the app redesign, it's hard to look at this situation as anything but a colossal unforced error. Sonos has been quietly adding back missing features and functionality with frequent updates. The chorus of customer frustration, however, isn't going away. So CEO Patrick Spence this week published a letter that covers the progress Sonos has made with the new app. It also contains Sonos' first direct apology for the rough patch that too many users have gone through. I want to begin by personally apologizing for disappointing you, Spence writes. There isn't an employee at Sonos who isn't pained by having let you down, and I assure you that fixing the app for all of our customers and partners has been and continues to be our number one priority. Unquote. Their number one priority was selecting that as the number one priority. One Olympic apology this week, former marathon world champion Paula Radcliffe has said she's very sorry after wishing a convicted rapist competing at the Olympics the best of luck. Steven van de Velde, who was named in the Netherlands beach volleyball squad for Paris 2024, had been sentenced to 4 years in prison in 2016 after pleading guilty to raping a 12-year-old British girl when he was 19. The Dutchman, who met his victim on Facebook, traveled from Amsterdam to the UK and raped the girl at an address in Milton Keynes. He's now 29. He resumed his volleyball career after serving just 12 months of his four-year sentence and was selected in June for the Dutch Olympic team. Quote, I am mortified that I expressed it so badly and didn't condemn the rape out loud, said Radcliffe. Earlier, in an interview with radio station LBC, she said, I know he's married now and has settled down. I think it's a tough thing to do to punish him twice. And if he's managed to successfully turn his life around after being sent to prison and to qualify and to be playing sport at the highest level, then I actually wish him the best of luck. In a series of posts on social media, Radcliffe apologized later on for her remarks. She's now a commentator for the BBC. I do believe in second chances after serving punishment, but I think the Olympics should be for those who uphold the ideals. That's why I brought the doping comparison in. I myself am shocked and disappointed at how I expressed this so badly. I am very sorry and should have done much better. I by no means meant to overlook the crime. I profoundly apologize and am deeply shocked and disappointed in myself and can't understand how I managed to convey it so badly. The Dutch Olympic Committee said after his release, van de Velde sought and received professional counseling. He demonstrated to those around him, privately and professionally, self-insight and reflection. Sorry, one more Olympic apology. New Zealand's Olympic Committee says its women's soccer team had its practice session disrupted by a drone flown by a member of the Canadian team that it's going to face in Group A. On July 22, a drone was flown over the New Zealand women's football team training session in Saint-Étienne, the committee said. This week, team support members immediately reported the incident to police, leading to the drone operator, who has been identified as a sport staff member of the wider Canadian women's football team, to be detained. I don't think that means the women were wider in Canada. The incident is immediately reported to the International Olympic Committee. Their committee's integrity unit said Team Canada has apologized and said it's investigating. Quote, the Canadian Olympic Committee stands for fair play, and we are shocked and disappointed. More shock. We offer our heartfelt apologies to New Zealand football, to all the players affected, and the New Zealand Olympic Committee. Unquote. The shocks of the week. And finally, CrowdStrike. Remember them? That's the internet security app organization. It's facing fresh backlash, according to the BBC, after giving staff and firms they work with a $10 Uber Eats voucher to say sorry for the global IT outage that CrowdStrike caused, causing chaos across airlines, banks, and hospitals last week. The cybersecurity company said in an email to its partners that it recognized the incident had caused extra work. Quote, to express our gratitude, your next cup of coffee or late night snack is on us, CrowdStrike wrote, directing people to use a code to access the $10 credit. The gesture was greeted by derision. One Reddit user said it's an absolute clown show. Another said, I literally wanted to drive my car after a bridge this weekend, and they brought me coffee. Nice, unquote. Some people who said they received a voucher also took to social media to say it didn't work. Uber flagged it as fraud because of high usage rates, CrowdStrike admitted. Comes amid growing questions over what financial compensation CrowdStrike customers and people impacted by the outage will be able to collect. My guess? There's some zeros in it. The firm has pledged to improve its software tests after that faulty content update for Windows systems caused the mass IT outrage. Outage and outrage. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's concluding this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, over these radio stations, or on your audio device of choice, whenever you want it. And I will be nice. Kinda. The tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego desk, Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans, for all their help with this week's broadcast. the email address for this program. A chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts before they all dissolve. And the playlist of the music heard here on allatharryshearer.com, along with a lot of stuff to read and enjoy and ignore. And as I said last week, I'm on X. Don't ask why. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.